Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. You've probably come across lots of advice for how to handle your money, but what's frustrating for a lot of people is that it seems that a lot of this advice is geared for the affluent and maybe not so much for folks of average means. We're about to change that today as we talk about financial planning for those with more modest incomes. With us today are three representatives from the Greater Kansas City Financial Planning Association. They are Sandy Weaver. She's a CPA and owner of Financial Security Advisors. Sandy, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Steve.
David Jackson is a financial advisor for Waddell & Reed. And David, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Alex Petrovic is a financial planner and founder of Petrovic Financial Services. Alex, good to have you,
good
too.
Good morning.
Well, David, how much truth is there to this idea that, you know, financial planning is mostly geared toward richer folks?
Well, it's true if you look at our industry. That's where the emphasis is placed because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
But you think about the big picture of financial planning, we all do it. You know, we may not get help doing it, but we're all doing some type of financial planning.
Well, let's get into this a little bit here, Sandy. And step number one may sound like so much common sense and maybe that it's not even worth mentioning, but it is. Live within your means.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you don't, it's just a downhill after that. It's really important. Financial planning, when you're low income or middle income, you have very little margin for error and you need to plan first. The affluent really have a pad to make to screw up. You know, but when you're at the lower end, you need to think things through and plan for it.
That's no fun, though.
Well, you know? But there are lots of good resources and free advice. The FPA has some. But, you know, ask around, get that, and make sure you do the very best with the money that you have.
Free advice, Alex. Tell me about that.
Free advice. Whoa.
What is available to folks who might need it?
Well, the website of the Financial Planning Association is a good place to start. The college or our website, the Certified Financial Planners, there's a lot of good information on there that it is really free.
Mm-hmm.
And in this town, there are also workshops throughout the year, Financial Planning Week in October and so forth, that are available to people with, let's say, modest means.
So if you want help, you can get it.
You sure can. It takes effort. You know, and this is a tough area because, you know, it really starts with budgeting. And I don't know anybody that really enjoys budgeting, knowing what's coming in and where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Sandy?
I did want to mention that the local Financial Planning Association also does a hotline once a year on one of the TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
And we also write a blog where we respond to questions from the public in one of the newspaper, well, your newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, you know, Alex was just mentioning, David, that, you know, the importance of budgeting. And do people really do that?
Well, the smart ones do.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way. Because, I mean, nobody wants to do it. It's not any fun. Like you said, it's no fun to do.
It's not any fun. Yeah.
And a lot of times when we are having this conversation with our clients, as opposed to saying budgeting, we just say, let's have a spending plan. Let's develop what your spending plan is, which it's the same thing, but it's a different take on it. And so a different way of looking at it, as opposed to thinking, okay, I'm budgeting, which means I can't do these things. I have a spending plan, which means these are the things I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you say, I've got X number of dollars to work with. These are where I'm going to allocate those dollars. And going into it with a plan of how I am going to spend my money helps you avoid all the traps that are out there. I mean, you know, just discretionary spending is one of the big traps. And if you've already decided, no, these dollars are going for this, then when you get into the store and they have this great deal, it's like, well, that doesn't fit that plan.
Well, so if you're going to do it, how do you go about doing it? Because don't you have to figure out first, David, exactly where your money is going to begin with?
And that's one of the things people hate doing. But it's one of the best exercises you could ever do is go maybe a couple of months and then write down everything you spend your money on. I mean, just to give yourself kind of a baseline of these are where my dollars are going. I mean, I give you myself as an example. If I carry cash, I get to the end of the pay period or whatever, and my wallet's empty, and I look back and I like, what did I spend my money on?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm one of those guys who I use my debit card for most of my spending, so at least I can go back. I have a record. It's like, oh, yeah, you spent this much for gas, spent this much for grocery. I always have a record of where my dollars went because that's the biggest problem we have. We just don't know where our dollars are going.
And so if you do this notion of you track every dollar you spend, you're going to find out what's going to surprise me at the end of that time.
Well, you know, the biggest surprise that I've seen for people is how much they spend eating out or doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I see a ton of – I had a couple that I was working with that they both made really good income, and they couldn't figure out why they couldn't save a dime. And so we finally actually sat down and put pencil to paper, and it turned out that they were going out to eat every single day. And it wasn't like just going to McDonald's. They're going to decent restaurants every single day and sometimes twice a day. And I looked at their numbers and said, you know what, 25% – of your discretionary spending or your excess cash is going towards eating out. Mm-hmm. It's like, does that make sense? And I think they kind of decided that they were going to start eating at home a little bit more and buying groceries, but, you know.
You hope so, anyway.
Yeah, at least.
Well, Alex, when David was describing that, you gave me two thumbs up. That's a problem you've come across yourself,
yeah,
it sounds
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely. I think for even myself and my wife, now that our kids are raised, we find ourselves going out to eat more often.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
This, yeah.
And how
this,
is that part of life?
It's
I'm
really
looking
good,
forward to it. Yeah. Yeah.
We went to La Fu Frog two weekends in a row, and I was like, ooh, there goes, that was like a house payment.
Yeah. So, well, can a guy like you enjoy La Fu Frog for someone who tracks where his money goes so diligently?
Well, if once you go, you should enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, there should be no guilt attached to it. But,
yeah.
No, it's eating out. I think they say it's like on average four times, if it's a decent place, what it would cost to eat something similar at home. So
yeah.
eating out, what we all have the problem is the whole, our society is so oriented towards the advertising of you need this, you need it now.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to overcome that at some level or else it'll be a long, lonely retirement.
Yeah. Well, Sandy, you guys urge people to focus on shifting from a reactive approach to a proactive approach, meaning what exactly?
Well, let's say you're spending $130 and you're only earning $100.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say then that you go through and start for a couple months, you write down everything that you spent that money on. So what you can do then is you can say, okay, I bought 130 different things. You know, which of these do I really need? Which of these then do I want? Which of the ones I could live without? The 30 at the bottom are the ones that you toss. So get rid of the expenditures that don't matter that much to you.
Mm-hmm.
Be proactive. Decide where you want to spend your money. What matters most?
At essence, you're saying take control of your life, in
yeah.
a sense, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And that's a hard concept for a lot of people.
It is. But a lot of times, if you just go through the exercise of, you know, writing down what you're spending, you know, for a couple of months, it self-corrects because it makes you stop and think, is this important to me? And maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you really don't even have to go the full distance of coming up with this spending plan.
And so ultimately, you're talking about aligning spending with your values, right? That's sort of what
yeah.
this is about.
Right. Let's say that you are a young couple and both were earning incomes and you have your first child and you decide your values are that you want one of the parents to stay home with that child. You cannot afford to keep the Starbucks habit. You can't afford to be eating out every weekend. You know, something's got to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if your values are that one parent stays home, then, you know, make that spending plan match that. Don't go into debt, you know, change things, you know. Infiltrate that back into the spending plan.
You know, the other thing you hear, David, is it's important to get on the same page with your spouse or your significant other. And this is the idea of working together as a team. Maybe it goes without saying, but that's important. Why?
Why?
Why? Yeah. And what kind of heartache are you biting off there?
Man, yeah. I've sat down with couples that were on totally different pages when it came to, you know, having a financial planning interview with them. And it's so uncomfortable.
And you become a marriage counsellor instead
in
of just a
sense,
financial
you
planner,
do.
Right?
I mean, and it's kind of scary because you don't want to take a side because whichever side, you know, you're just poisoning the other one. And,
yeah.
You know, so, but it's really tricky. And all you can do is communicate that value thing of what are we really trying to do as a couple? What is it really that we're trying to accomplish? And if they can find a couple of things that they really truly agree on, a perfect example, I run into clients who will tell me, there's nothing more important to me than my kids. There's nothing more important to me than my kids. And then I ask them, well, how much insurance do you have in case one of you passed away to make sure that your kids are taken care of? You know, so that's a conversation that's getting into the values. Are you putting your money where your mouth is? If the kids are really that important to you, are you doing the things that really would benefit your kids if something happened negative? You know, are you really saving for their college if one of the most important things to you is them being able to go to college? Mm-hmm. Well, if that's important to you, then set aside some money. You know, so it's those kind of conversations of getting a buy-in on, okay, what are we really trying to accomplish as a couple? You know, because one of them may be a spender and one of them may be a saver, and that creates all kind of friction. But if you can come up with an agreement, okay, these are the things that we're really trying to reach for, then you can at least create a team atmosphere on some things.
So you're really asking people to look at themselves in the mirror, in a sense, and really figure out what's important here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Before we went on the air, Sandy was describing how so many of us bury our heads in the sand when it comes to financial issues. We know we got financial issues that we're struggling with, but we don't want to actually take a hard look at it and deal with it. And the longer we don't deal with it, the worse things get. And so, yeah, you know, a lot of times as a financial planner, our job is to help them unbury their heads and really take a look at where they are, what they're doing, and if those things align with what they really are about.
Well, Alex, where do you prefer to spend your time, marriage counseling or financial planning? How does that work for you when you get in that position?
Yeah, it's difficult. And part of it is, you know, I think we spoke a little bit this when we were on the show previously, is where they got those financial values, you know, the financial literacy of their childhood, let's say. And I think that's important when people are getting married to understand those strong points and weak points in those relationships. And we all have them. My wife and I tend to spend more than we should. We recognized it. Okay, it's better.
Thank you for your honesty. That's great coming from a financial planner.
She's not
planner.
Listening today.
Yeah.
But at least you didn't blame her.
No, we both have it. So first is the recognition of the issue. And then it's to agree upon how you're going to get there. But we see that in couples. You'll have one that spends more and one that doesn't. And you have couples that one just doesn't do anything and the other one takes charge of everything. Mm-hmm. So you see a wide range of financial relationships. But I think it gets back again to how did they develop their own values about money when they were children? And that's an issue that I think is prevalent right now in terms of whether it's Sly James's efforts here recently or just trying to analyze why we do what we do.
You know? And I imagine what some folks out there, Sandy, don't have values when it comes to money. Do I have that right?
Yes.
When you read these stories about how much debt people are carrying and you begin to conclude, well, maybe some people just, they don't roll that way.
Yeah, their frame of reference is very different. Ruby Payne, Payne, is a good author. She comes at it from an educational background for school teachers who are teaching children who are brought up in different kinds of households. But, you know, for us all being middle class, you know, we realize the importance of saving enough money to pay the next mortgage payment or the next apartment rent payment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're born lower income, you may not have that frame of reference that says this is an important thing. Your frame of reference may be coming at it from a different angle, and you don't place value on that. Saving money just so someone else can take it away from you. Maybe your frame of reference, so you spend it now.
But it's
difficult to work with clients who don't have the same frame of reference, who, you know, honest to goodness, sometimes you'll run into a client who really does not see the benefit of saving for retirement, that, you know, they just live in the now.
But it is more difficult today. I mean, you know, my generation compared to my dad and his generation, you know, we're having to, you know, save for a lot more for college, save a lot more for retirement. And it is just, it's Death Valley out there for a lot of people these days. The weight of the responsibility as someone who's living through it right now with one son in college and a second one not far away, it's pretty breathtaking.
It is. And
It's ridiculous on a lot of levels. I mean, what it's become these days.
You agree to be able to do it yourself sometimes,
that's right.
I think. It's not an easy task. And I think you need software and tools to help you figure out how much you'll be saving for college, how much should you be saving for retirement if you want to step down at 65. It's not something you can just figure out on the back of a napkin anymore.
And one of the struggles, we talked about this a little bit last time you were here, is this notion that at least my experience has been when I've sat down with folks like yourselves, the answer always comes back that I'm not quite saving enough for retirement. I'm not saving enough for college. I should be paying more extra on my mortgage every month. I mean, the things the shoulds seem to outweigh everything else when these meetings occur.
Yeah, but there are always options. You can say, you know, excuse me, we have some folks who really want to work longer. They really couldn't imagine themselves retired. So sometimes you do have somebody that says, I want to work till I'm 70, and they don't have real high spending levels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those people, you know, so let's say that instead of retiring at 60, you wanted to retire at 70. I bet you would not be told that you have to save more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sometimes it's not just savings more. Maybe it's adjusting the goals a little bit so that they're still palatable, but the now then is easier to live with.
I guess my point is, David, the reality these days is so much starker than it, so much more challenging might be the way to put it, than our the generation of our parents.
Well, that is very true. And one of the things I was thinking about is the median household income in America right now is right around $50,000, which means half of Americans have household income below $50,000. I've tried to do budgeting for people that are making around $40,000, and it is tough. It is really tough when you start calculating rent or mortgage, a car payment, groceries, utilities, the cell phone, all these different things, plus adding on saving for retirement. It's tough. I mean, so, you know, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about this is what you should do, but mm-hmm. I do know the reality. You know, and I remember reading this survey that said most people in America would say, if I made 25% more money than I'm making now, I would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter if you're making $25,000 a year or $200,000 a year. Everybody basically said, if I had 25% more money, that would give me the cushion that I need. But we know that's not true, because the more you make, the more you tend to spend, and it ends up, you know, wiping that out anyway. So yeah. It is tough. It is tough. I'm not going to sugarcoat that.
I would add one other thing. When our parents, or my parents anyway, the baby boomer generation parents came back from the war, the U.S. dollar was a lot stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It bought more.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a steady devaluation of the dollar over the years. That's brought us other benefits, but in terms of buying power, I think I watched my father and mother raise six kids, and one of them worked, and we really didn't want for stuff, but I think it went further then too. I think now it's tougher just in terms of purchasing power.
But one of the things I would chime into, I think the bigger issue is not purchasing power of the dollar, is income increases. Over the last 30 years, for the average person, their income has not kept up with inflation.
That's the other fact.
Yeah, right. So right. It's like there's been a squeeze going on. And so you think about as the squeeze first started happening, a lot of husbands were saying, my wife needs to go to work too, to kind of make up the difference, because I'm not getting the raises I was getting. So now we have two incomes. Well, you had the two incomes, and then still inflation was outpacing wage increases. So people started saying, well, let me use the house and leverage against the house to sustain my lifestyle. Then we had the economic collapse. So now we're to a point where, okay, what do people do? You know, and as long as there aren't any raises coming, it just makes it tough.
If you just are tuning in here this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking about financial planning for folks with more modest means, of more modest means. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Margaret asked this question about this method to save on expenses. Do you guys recommend paying a CPA to do income taxes? I've had good success using a free online tax prep service for my federal form with a modest fee for Kansas and Missouri income taxes. What about that, Sandy?
I think if you have a simple situation and you can do it yourself, you're probably not losing tax savings. I mean, I think you can do it yourself. If you have a W-2 and you use those tax softwares, you're probably getting everything you're entitled to.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have any problem going that way then?
No. The more complicated your tax situation, different kinds of income, expenses, you're running through that return, then I think your CPA services are invaluable, because they know things you don't.
Yeah. Another way of saving money, there's some talk here, Alex, about using envelopes, a cash-only system. What about using envelopes to sort of sort out what you can spend in from different piles?
Sure. It's a methodology of just keeping yourself honest of what you've allocated for a certain bucket of spending.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very simple, and it does work for certain people because they know they've allocated this much for groceries for the month and this much for other, let's say, wants and so forth. So it's a very simplistic way of keeping yourself on track.
Do these folks actually go to the bank and get hundreds of dollars in cash and break
them
up in envelopes?
That's what I hear. I'm not familiar with it myself, but that's what I hear, how that's done.
So you're breaking things up into bite-sized chunks here.
Allocating each month where I'm going to spend what, and you go to that envelope, and when that envelope is empty, you're done spending for that allocation.
David, does that work?
Well, it's forced discipline, so it can. Yeah. You know, it definitely can, but then, you know, if you're the type who wants the envelopes empty, it's like you pull out the charge card, then it kind of backfires.
You go to the other envelope.
Yes.
There's always another envelope to go toward here. If someone says you keep your credit cards in a freezer, what's that all about? Do people actually do that?
Yeah, it can. If you have a problem that you will just spend money, then do make it hard for yourself to do that. We had a client meeting last week, and they have done a great job saving. They're in their low 60s. You know, they have an ample portfolio, and we haven't done the retirement projection yet, but I'm sure they'll be able to step down when they want to. But we said, we really want you to have a bank savings. We want you to have an emergency fund, and you don't want that money invested. And they said, we do not want to have a bank savings or a reserve set aside because we will just spend it. And
really?
So, yeah, and so, you know, I still recommend they have a bank savings. But if they know themselves so well that money lying around will get spent, then at least they're dealing with the problem and preventing that.
Yeah, David, I've heard that one before, too.
Yeah,
I can't force myself to not touch this money if I know it's there. So
yeah.
I've actually had clients tell me, you know, put my money in something I can't get to.
Yeah.
And I tell them, okay, you can't get to this money.
Even if it's a 30-day T-bill, it keeps you from the instant, you know, expenditure.
You can do 30-day T-bills?
Well, yeah, can't you through federal direct?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a pain. Most people wouldn't do it just because, you know, nature of the beast.
816-235-2888 is our phone number. We're talking with our good financial planners here about directing our conversation today to folks of more modest means. Molly from Lawrence, welcome to the show, Molly.
Hi. I was just wondering if we know what the tipping point is where if you make more income, you no longer necessarily spend it, but you might save it instead.
The tipping point.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
I mean, because she's got a valid point. It's like if you're making, say, $40,000 a year, you're spending every dime. If you're making $200,000 a year, you're gonna have a hard time spending every dime. You can, mm-hmm. but, you know, you're usually going to be able to save fairly easily. So her question is, where is that crossover point where it's not quite as difficult to not have to spend every dime? And I don't know if it's $75,000 a year. That's just an interesting question. I don't know if there's a specific answer.
I like to have the problem of spending $200,000 a year. I probably work through that okay. Molly, good question. I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aaron from Lenexa. Aaron, good morning.
Hi. I was just calling in because I have on my smartphone that anytime I swipe my card, I can manually put in how much I spent, and it really helps me stop and think about how much money.
Huh. What's the app?
Yeah. It's called Spending Tracker. It should be on the Play Store. It's free.
Well, that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, it really does.
And how well does it work for you, Aaron?
It works really well for me. Whenever I go and buy groceries, I'll put it in, and then next time I go and try and pick up a new video game or something, I stop, I check my phone, and if I'm a little lower than I thought I was, I maybe don't buy that.
All right.
That's a good tool. That sounds like a really good tool.
Other tools you guys recommend, and thank you for calling, Aaron, Mint.com. What is that? What's Mint.com?
I've recommended that to a lot of clients just because it kind of does the same thing or in a similar way. What I really like about it is that at the end of the month, it will show you in categories how you spent your money. So it can kind of, you know, tell you, okay, you spent this much on entertainment, you spent this much on gas and fuel, those kind of things, where it gives you a really quick sense. But I know there are a lot of different tools out there that are available, you know, but whatever you use, just use it, you know.
And there's something called Quicken and then YNAB. You guys know what those are?
Quicken is a more robust version of Mint.com, and it is budgeting software. It will automatically integrate with your bank checking account. So you can export out of your bank checking account into Quicken, export out of your credit cards accounts into Quicken, and it will, you know, do as David just mentioned, it will categorize everything and you can see where you're spending your money. But that's a different approach than, you know, what this gentleman was who just called in, tracking it as he's spending it. And I think that's excellent. Both are useful.
Yeah, I think the other one was why not a budget, which is similar.
That's what YNAB stands for. Yeah,
and that's similar to the Mint, which I think Mint was recently bought by Quicken.
Yeah.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, and there's another one. I was on the Sly James effort here last month or so. I did a little research of what he was talking about. And I went on that website, which was Spent Looking for Change. It's a documentary.
And he's talking about the payday loan industry and maybe trying to get away from that a little bit.
For very modest means, there's Bluebird.com, and it's a joint effort between Walmart and American Express. Basically, it's a sort of like a bank, but there's no fees. And it's, I think there's something like 40 million Americans do not have traditional banking services. So that they're paying with cash or they're going to payday loans and so forth. But this is a new effort that's backed by many financial, let's say, progressive, responsible advocates of low-income people. Bluebird.com, and it's low fees, and I see now that it's a guaranteed money, but it's kind of, you have checking, you have a debit card and so forth, but you don't have the absorbent fees, and it's in facilities that many people, you know, at ATMs or Walmarts and so forth. So for people with pretty modest means that have had poor checking experiences, it's supposed to be one of the new avenues for those.
Let's talk about ways of saving money. And one of the first things on your list here is eating out less and maybe packing your lunch. And I remember a buddy of mine who was really hard up for money and was going out for lunch every single day, and finally dawned on him that maybe that's not the way to go. It takes people a while sometimes, David, to sort of open up to new possibilities, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's one of them. Unless you put pen to paper, you really don't realize how much money you're spending going out for lunch and all. And, you know, it still costs you money to pack a lunch. You know, you got to pay for the groceries and all. But if you ever did the comparison, the dollar savings is significant. So
yeah. Review utility, Sandy, for better deals, especially TV and cell phone plans. And I've been on Time Warner any number of times to lower my plan, and it oftentimes works, you know.
Well, yeah, and lots of times what will happen is people will say, well, it's not that much money. You know, I've got a cell phone, but I still have my landline, but hey, it's just 35 or it's 35 a month, and that's not that big a deal. But if you have a lot of small little things, let's say on your car insurance you have roadside assistance, but yet you are also paying for AAA.
Yeah.
Granted, it's just 50 or 60 bucks a year, but it's still that. And how many of those are going on in your budget? You know, if you start cleaning up, you know, the loose ends, it can be meaningful dollars.
Buy previously owned and used items at thrift stores, on Craigslist, garage sales, or eBay, David.
Well,
you're a cheapskate, it sounds like.
No, my wife is. Boy, she is so good at finding deals, and I just love her for that. You know, she'll go to the garage sales, and you know, but she does that. Honey, I saved you $200 by spending $100. It's like, yeah, really.
Yeah.
But no, she's good at that. So.
Shop at bulk stores. I'm thinking Costco. Alex, you're a fan of that.
Yeah, absolutely. The problem is, though, once you go in there, you see so many things on sale or that are great prices that you tend to overbuy. But another idea,
you can't walk in that store and leave without spending $200. At least that's been my experience.
It's hard.
You know? Yeah.
One other item about utilities or credit cards or bank statements, if you have an overdraft or if you have a late fee, call that credit card company. Very often they'll waive that fee. Now, if it happens too many times, it won't happen. But everybody has missed a credit card payment, and there's a late payment, but call them, or even a bank overdraft. Certain banks, if you call them and give them some, they can waive a few of those anyway. So you can, and those are $25, $35, $50 charges.
Yeah.
Grow a garden. Is that a good idea, Sandy?
Well, it can be if you have the time and the inclination. You can also split a CSA with your neighbor. You can go to farmers markets. Those are often cheaper sources of fresh food.
But you haven't mentioned rabbits or squirrels, and they can be a big issue when it comes to growing a garden. It's been my experience. You know, there goes your profit right there. Ask for and take advantage of discounts. AAA, senior, military, David.
Yeah, there's all kind of them. I hate to admit, I've got my AARP card, and I know there's all kind of discounts on it, but I'm not ready to admit how old I am.
So I always throw my offers away. I can't face the reality yet. I'm always like, nah, you must have the wrong guy here.
Yeah, I'm not that old. No way.
They started sending them to me when I was like 35 years old. It's like, what is this, you know? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Florence from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, host Steve and guests. I'm a senior citizen who struggles with consistent savings. And the question I wanted to ask, I should have been writing down some of that good information for low or lower income when I was listening intently on the phone. The question is to the guests, could they share with us information about traditional credit unions as a savings mean and for little financial crisis? Credit unions.
Credit unions. What about credit unions, guys? Who wants to
Good
jump
idea.
On that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certain fraternal organizations might have them. There's certain credit unions that that really don't have barriers to entrance, and they can be very good because you can get cheaper car loans, lower interest credit cards, installment loans, and so forth. So certainly check them out. I'm not sure if they're all created equal, but certainly if you work for like the Postal Union or Power and Light, they all have credit unions. But there's other ones as well.
I'm wondering just about basic financial literacy, Alex, in the sense that, you know, Flo mentions credit unions, wants to ask about that. There are so many different products out there. A lot of folks really confused about what are reasonable options for them, I think.
Yeah, it takes a little work or talking to other people.
Yeah.
To ask their experiences. But, yeah, this is a very fragmented industry. So there is so many different options, and some of them aren't very good options. Certainly certain credit cards. You got to do your homework.
Hey, while we're on the topic, I did want to bring up, though, there's a Money Smart initiative that goes on each year, and it's across the country, but Kansas City is very heavily involved in it. It happens every April, and it's sponsored by the FDIC, the Federal Reserve, and a lot of financial institutions throughout the country, and throughout the city. And they're offering seminars, free workshops, all during the month of April that people can get an opportunity. If you have a question, just attend one of those free seminars, and you can get an answer.
How can people connect with that?
I wish I had their
It is online. On the website at the Federal Reserve.
Ah, uh-huh. Okay. Something to think about. All right, back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Lauren from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is about those who don't have any problem budgeting, as in not overspending, but maybe don't have enough to save heavily. So I'm wondering if you have any advice for people who might not feel like it's worth saving that $50 and over the course of the year, you know, maybe only having $1,000 extra left over from their just basic expenses. Like, where would you advise people to invest that? Would it be in the market and stocks, or would it be in just a savings account? I mean, because there are a lot of people out there who are basically breaking even and trying to still save.
Sandy Weaver wants to hop in here. Lauren?
On your monthly budget, savings needs to be a line item. Savings needs to come right after fixed overhead, you know, before discretionary. You know, so it should be something that you do every month before you eat out, before, you know, you go shopping for clothes. Because it's really important, and as you want to save in a tax-advantaged manner. So if you can save with an employer pension and possibly get an employer match, that's your number one best way to save to get the most bang for the buck there. A Roth IRA is up there at the top also. But you want to be building those accounts, you know, as you go along. And I'm assuming that you already have an emergency fund set aside. And then as far as how you invest that, you know, on a long-term basis, that pension plan or that Roth IRA, you know, that's something that, you know, a balanced mutual fund with bonds and stocks or something perhaps a little bit simpler since you're dealing with small amounts, but you'll need to be careful of the fees so those don't eat you up when you're looking at $50 or $100 a month.
I was going to say, you know, in these days, the whole notion of sticking a few bucks away in the bank and earning some interest on a savings account, that option doesn't really work, does it? You don't make any money on interest these days.
Yeah.
That's why I would like to recommend to her that she think in terms of her savings as what are the savings for? Because part of her savings should be going into a typical savings account, but she may have some longer term objectives too. And then so she thinks, okay, if I've got these number of dollars that I can save every month, a portion of it will go just to the bank for my emergency savings. Another portion is going to go towards something more long term, whether it's her retirement or something, or kids' college or whatever that happens to be, a down payment on a house down the road. And the further out in time that goal is, the more aggressive she should be as far as trying to make her money work and maybe investing some of it.
Does that help, Lauren?
Yeah, it does. I guess the other thing I would say is, or ask is, how do you convince people that it's worth, or do you have any way of convincing people that it's worth to save that $50 a month as opposed to spend it, you know? But I mean, I don't struggle with that, but I know that there are people out there that don't think it's worth it and wouldn't, you know, and would rather have a night out or something as opposed to, like, maybe it wouldn't actually accumulate over time. So if you can, and I can listen off the air if you have anything to say.
Thanks, Lauren. Alex?
Well, I think you have to, you know, think of it as a somewhat of a game. You know, you pay your utilities monthly, you pay your car payment monthly, you pay your mortgage monthly, maybe you pay your health insurance monthly. You know, so you think about paying yourself monthly. And obviously, this woman here sounded younger than at least myself. And so she needs to realize that having that length of time, although it takes a while to build that corpus, long term, it's going to be meaningful money. I mean, when I was a kid, I know a 63 Chevy my dad bought was $3,300. Super sport, black interior, hot little car. That same car today is probably $40,000 or $50,000.
Hmm.
So you have to know that money will grow, but you have to be confident enough to do it. And the younger you do it, you're so far ahead.
Chris from Olathe. Chris, you're on with our financial planners. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Well, thanks, Chris.
I had a comment that I was going to make, but then this other lady prompted a thought in my head. For a lot of people, it is really hard to save, and I completely understand that. And one way to help them is to have your employer automatically deposit their paycheck in the bank. And you can have it so one part of your paycheck goes into a checking account, and you can set it up so a smaller amount goes into a savings account. But that way, it's at least automatic. And there's a way to save some money.
All right.
The reason I originally called was to say that some people just don't make enough money, and one way they can make more money is to improve their skills by taking classes or taking advantage of classes that their employer may offer, or they may want to take a class at a junior college and improve their skills and get more money.
Chris, good suggestion, and you're taking the suggestion right off my script here today, Chris. We were going to talk about that at some point, so thanks very much.
Okay, all right. Well, have your employer put the money in the bank for you.
All right.
That way you don't
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Let's go to Susan from Independence. Susan, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just was touched by the woman who called, the older woman who called, because I just want to recommend there's a number of different social service agencies that actually teach money management. And when you're on a low income, it's just desperately difficult to do that, but they have other resources. And I know Community Services League out in Independence, and there's other agencies in the city that are actually trying new ways of setting up places to loan for a short thing and for a short need so that they don't have that big trap that they're encased in. And a lot of people who get in trouble, that's why they get in trouble, because they really need something. They got a job, they're working their tails off, but something comes up that they can't handle. And so I just really recommend going to some of those. And
we think of that as, oh, when you're really down and out, but it's not. It's a lot of people are in that circumstance, and especially I think a lot of older people that are on that fixed income, that they don't know the resources that are out there that could really make a difference. So
all right.
I just wanted to let you know. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you did, Susan. Thank you for the call. And Pat from Lawrence. Pat, you're on Up to Date again with our financial planners. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is just how do you manage debt when you already have debt? We just got out of college. We're getting married. We're looking to buy a house. How do I take on even more debt without being crushed when I have all those student loans?
So how much debt is too much debt, Sandy?
Well, there are some guidelines. 36% of gross income, those kind of guidelines. You can go to Apprison Consumer Credit Counseling and get some help on that. The other thing, though, is on your student loans. What is your earning capacity and your ability to make the payments that you need to on those student loans? And it may be such that that impacts your decision to buy a house. Maybe you don't have enough money right now to buy a house. Maybe you need to focus instead on enhancing your income.
And one of the big concerns in this country right now is we're going to be seeing a lot of this situation going forward, given the load so many young people are carrying from student debt.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Pat?
Thank you.
Yeah, I wish there was a simple answer there.
Yeah, I wish there was a simple answer too, Pat. We wish you all the best, okay?
Thanks.
Well, yeah, and one suggestion too is managing cars and car purchases. This can be a major trouble spot. David, what do you recommend when it comes to managing automobiles?
Well, I think the big thing is just to understand that buying a car is a depreciating asset. So putting all your money in
and
a car.
And that means what?
That means you buy a $30,000 car and you drive it off the lot, now it's worth $25,000. You've just lost, you know. So don't buy a car thinking it's an investment, and, you know, don't use too much of your discretionary money putting it into a car, because you'd be much better served in the long term using that discretionary money to set up the kind of savings that Chris was talking about, having the employer putting it directly into an account and building something.
Right, right. And there's some thought, Alex, that low-mileage used cars are often the best value.
Sure. I think it plays to David's point just there. You're getting the markdown. It's got a few miles on it. And you would probably either finance less or cash for it. So certainly a good idea.
A piece of advice here. Plan to own your vehicle as long as possible. Not having a car purchase boosts savings potential. Sandy?
Absolutely, because let's say that you can stomach and throw your ego away and just buy a $5,000 beater, but you can rent it for $100,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a car payment for all those years. You can spend that money elsewhere, pay off student loans, or save for a down payment on a house. It can make a lot of things happen a lot quicker if you're not putting a lot of money into transportation.
Well, my 17-year-old looks at me sometimes, and he wonders why he can't drive a better car than the 1998 Honda Civic he has with 180,000 miles. I look at him sometimes like he's got 9 eyeballs. I mean, you've got a car. I mean, what more do you want
exactly.
at that age? But he wonders about that sometimes. Okay, how about medical bills, Alex? This can oftentimes be a huge pitfall for people. What do you advise on the medical health insurance front?
Well, certainly having health insurance is the way to go if you can afford it. And under the new Affordable Health Care Act, many more people can qualify either for subsidy or subsidy and lower costs. So, you know, when you're younger, though, you feel pretty invincible. And then something happens. So it would be a combination of having an emergency fund that's significant, as well as health insurance. And many young people do not feel, you know, that they're going to get hurt or sick. Of course, under the new bill as well, which is now 4 or 5 years old, you know, you can stay on your family plan if they have one up to age 26. But
yeah,
medical bills come out of nowhere. And they can really bankrupt you.
So going without health insurance, without health coverage, Alex, that would be something sounds like
it's
you would advise against.
Not a prudent advice. People do it because they, you know, they have other needs, they perception of needs. But it's certainly we would highly recommend doing it.
Okay, David.
Well, you know, one of the big things I would like to say about the Affordable Care Act is there have been a lot of people who've been wanting to retire, get that age around 60, and they've decided they had to keep their job because of health insurance. Now that gives them an option to go ahead and retire and not have to worry about waiting till Medicare to kick in at age 65. They can get on the ACA based on their income at retirement and have something suitable.
There's also something, Sandy, that's called the Health Care Savings Account, HSA. What is that, the Health Savings Account?
That's a great tax deduction. Let's say that you're single and you have a health savings account. And let's say that you do, as Alex just mentioned, and you go buy an insurance policy off of, you know, the Obamacare, and it has a high deductible. Let's say it has a $5,000 deductible. Mm-hmm. That means that you need to spend that much first, you know, before they're going to kick in. But you probably have pretty cheap medical premiums. So you can use this HSA and put in, for a single person, $3,350. But the beauty of it is you get a $3,350 tax deduction on your tax return this year for doing it.
So you're making it both ways.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Let's go to David from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. I just thought I'd throw in an example. Everything you guys are talking about is near and dear to me. Halfway through college, I had a credit score in the 390s with, you know, JCPenney cards, so I could put cars on the or wheels on the car, you know, and other store cards for clothing and stuff like that. But I'm at a point now where my credit score is up close to $800. Car's paid off. You know, there's money in the bank. And everything you guys are talking about gets you there. Stop spending on debt. Start putting a little bit aside. You know, every raise I got at work, that raise went into a savings account. So it's possible to go from a 300 credit score to an almost 800 credit score.
Oh, good for you, David. I'm glad you called. Thanks very much.
And I'm glad his name is David. Way to go.
There you go. Thanks, David. Sonia from up in Gladstone. Sonia, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, Steve Kraske. I love your show.
Oh, thanks, Sonia.
I just heard your advice. I wrote a check for $25 for our food pantry at my church. Of course, somehow the check was paid, but I didn't have enough money to cover it. They took $34 out of my account, and that never happens with me. I took one of the gentlemen's advice. I called the bank just a few minutes ago. They put my $34 back into my account.
Well, and Alex Petrovecchio, he'll buy you lunch today as well. That sounds great.
Get you six lattes.
Yeah. I love your show. I was just listening. I'm saying, okay. I said, well, let me see if they're going to give me my money back. They did.
So you mean advice on this show actually worked is what you're saying here. That's really great news.
I love your show, Steve.
Thanks, Sonia. I'm glad you called. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Before we leave the air, we got to get this whole idea of credit card and debt and people getting trapped with credit card debt. What might you advise along this front, Sandy Weaver, as you look at this big issue that so many folks struggle with?
Boy, the number one way to avoid problems and shooting yourself in the foot is have a bank savings account for emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
To go through a year and think that everything's going to go smoothly is unrealistic. You have to have something set aside for emergencies, and that will solve so many problems.
Yeah, and credit card debt, how do you handle it, David? What do you advise? You see people, I'm sure, all the time that come in to see you with a mountain of that stuff.
Yeah, you know, so the key is living within your means. And when you have credit card debt, that means that you've decided to purchase some things that you really can't afford to pay in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just really focus on living within your means and avoid payday loan places at all costs. I mean, that should be an absolute last resort.
Alex, how often do you see people who are absolutely stunned to find out what kind of interest they're paying on their credit cards or even payday loan for that matter?
Yeah, luckily, most of the people that we see aren't having those sort of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that's the nature of our business.
If they're conscientious enough to come see you, they're
right,
not
that
doing that kind of stuff.
That means they have money and they can pay their prices. But yeah, credit card, gosh, it's amazing. Payday loans, unbelievable interest. But one other thing about generating more income if you finally can curtail your spending is side jobs, individual side jobs, catering, tutoring, delivery services, cooking, house sitting, dog sitting. There's some creative ways, if you have the time, that you can generate a little extra money. Let's say that you're in a job that doesn't pay a lot. But there's the entrepreneurial spirit with the internet and so forth, social media and whatnot. You can develop a little side business to generate that little extra money that maybe either increases your savings or reduces your debt.
Well, some very good advice today from our very good financial planners. Again, Sandy Weaver, owner of Financial Security Advisors, David Jackson with Waddell & Reed, Alex Petrovic, founder of Petrovic Financial Services. Thank you all very much for some great advice here, guys. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Steve. Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
You saved some folks some money today, Alex. Good for you.
Thank you.